Hello and welcome to the latest edition of the TeachNet podcast. Today we're going to be talking to Jason Oler, and we've had the pleasure of meeting and working with Jason Oler in the past. And Jason, I don't know whether you're comfortable with the word guru or expert, but you know, in our opinion, you're one of the gurus in when it comes to the whole concept of digital storytelling. So, Jason, you're very welcome to us here in Ireland.
Well, thank you.
So, Jason, we've been introducing the whole concept of digital storytelling to our teachers, and we've introduced your work in the area of digital storytelling, and we've been talking about some of your thinking in relation to getting kids working on and creating stories. And I suppose, to start with, how would you define digital storytelling to the uninitiated and you know, to someone who is coming to this from a new perspective?
Well, on a technical level, it's being able to produce media in much the same way that we have had people, professionals, produce media for us, except that we're going to do it with low-end tools for literally no money, and with a plethora of tools that 5 years ago was unimaginable. So on the technical level, that's what that means. It means that we can all create movies now, and we can do so rather cheaply and so on. On an educational level, what it really boils down to is if you want to be literate in the digital age, you need to be able to write whatever it is you read. And there is no better way to construct media or to write the media that we consume than to take very inexpensive tools and apply those in pursuit of creating a story using all of the senses and the perspectives and the intellectual tools and models and so on that professional mediaists, as I like to call them, use.
Okay. How do you think that affects how we define literacy and traditional literacy, and I suppose where traditional literacy crosses over with media literacy and digital literacy? Just maybe you might talk for a minute about, you know, there's lots of definitions running around, and where you're at with defining literacy for the 21st century.
Well, in a nutshell, I would say that to be digitally literate, you need to be able to use digital tools effectively, creatively, and wisely. And a few years ago, I added funnily. And you need to be able, in pursuit of being able to write whatever it is you read. And I use the words read and write metaphorically to mean consume and produce. Media literacy was born out of a mass media era when we were concerned about the fact that there was a lot of power concentrated in large companies who, by virtue of the fact that we couldn't talk back, could basically sell us ideas, products, whatever. Now we're at a point where we can actually talk back using social media and creating our own media and so on. So it means not only just being able to read critically, but write critically the media forms of the day. There is no better way to understand how media persuades than to create media yourself.
Okay, great. You used a term there which I haven't really come across in the literature when you were just speaking there, right? You used the term funnily, right? And I think that's very important. And maybe you might just expand on that a little bit for us.
Well, it's my neologism for I needed to make the word fun somehow fit in a way that wasn't awkward into my mantra. So I just invented the word funnily. But what I've discovered over the years is that particularly when I'm teaching teachers, if they're not having fun, they're probably not learning. And it becomes a very frustrating enterprise for them to harness a lot of new things all at once. They're harnessing new hardware, new software, new ways to think, new relationships with students because the students know more than they do, and so on. And so I said, you need to be having some fun here. And if you're not, it's probably something you need to get up and walk away from and come back to when you have that spirit of fun within you again.
Great, and obviously, the kids themselves having fun is a key part of all of this.
It's almost their Achilles heel. I mean, I'm all for kids having fun with producing media and so on, but it's our job as teachers to make sure that the goal is something far beyond that. And we tend to, I've helped kids create so many pieces of media at this point, and they do not naturally hew towards creating coherent, well-researched, well-narrated stories. They tend to go towards the technical end of digital storytelling. And it's up to us to set up expectations for excellence in terms of communication and story and be able to provide that kind of feedback. The teacher really doesn't need to be the technician magician, just the guide on the side at this point. The kids know how to run the stuff. It's up to us to help them understand how to tame their natural inclination to push buttons in pursuit of telling a coherent and meaningful story.
And getting that balance right between the technology and the fun and the learning and producing something and reaching an end point, do you think that has there's difficulties there in a teacher grasping their role and adopting that role of facilitator and I suppose letting go to a certain extent?
Oh, for sure there is. And the digital age, I think, has been mostly upsetting in terms of the evolving nature of relationships in the classroom. And teachers were taught in a different way. And teachers were employed part as, I think, teacher and babysitter and a sort of promoting the kind of behaviors that we hope the kids will pick up and take with them into adulthood and so on. And there's nothing wrong with any of that. But the reality is that now that the tools have changed and the kids are better than teachers tend to be in terms of knowing how to punch buttons, teachers have, I think, a wonderful opportunity to stand off at the side and say, you know what, I'm going to leave the clicks and the tricks to you. What I'm concerned about here is whether you're being effective in what it is you have researched and you are trying to communicate. And that I can do not knowing anything about any of this gear. And that's really true. I mean, we go to the movies, we come home, we sit around the kitchen table and we deconstruct. And we say, you know, the story really wasn't very good, or the special effects were over the top, that kind of thing. That's exactly the kind of input that we need to give kids. We don't tend to do that. We tend to give, I think, an A for anything that moves on the screen. And I understand where that comes from. That's teachers looking at stuff that kids produce. It's technically very advanced. They sort of walk up to the computer, their eyes go wide, and they go, oh my God. And their thinking is, I could never do that, so how can I give them anything less than an A? And we need to absolutely, absolutely stop doing that. We need to hold them to the same levels of communication that we would want them to observe if they were just writing something.
Okay. So there's, I suppose there is a gap there, and I suppose it's through professional development and working with teachers that we can help bridge that gap. And I suppose confidence is a lot of what comes into play there with teachers.
Sure, they need to feel confident, not as a techie, but as a talkie and as a teachie. They need to feel confident in looking over or looking at student work that's been generated with software that they perhaps have never heard of and say to themselves, I don't care how you created that. This isn't clear. The music's too loud there because I can't understand you. This is no time to abandon our common sense. And I actually have kids go home and watch TV and make notes about, oh, transitions, the use of music and so on, because they don't tend to get this stuff naturally right. They tend to overdo it. Sure. So let's go look at what the professionals do.
Okay, good. You used the concept of door openers. Can you expand on this a little for us?
I think we're at the point now where everybody has the tool. The tools are available for everybody to tell their own story in their own way. And that, to me, is the meta message of the digital age for the past 25 years. We all get to tell our own story in our own way. The real art of teaching is opening doors and finding that door for that individual child that will open it in such a way that they can come through it and say whatever it is they have to say. Okay. And the palette right now is so rich. You have everything from the traditional sort of lecturing and chalk talk on one end to making your own movies and mashups and everything on the other end. And so I find that when I'm helping kids create media, I'm just looking for that door that opens when I say, okay, well, why don't you go heavy then on the voice part of this and go take your own pictures? And you're just looking for that magical combination that makes them, that just sort of resonates, and off they go.
Okay, and I'm interested when you talk about, traditionally we'd get the child to use a storyboard or to start writing, and then we'd kind of process that and so on. You put forward the concept of developing a media script, and maybe you might talk to us a little bit about what that means and how it's different from maybe a traditional approach to story writing.
My approach is this. Most people will approach the story part of digital storytelling, sometimes not at all. I see a lot of digital storytelling workshops that basically look like software and hardware training sessions. And I don't think that's the hard part of it at all. And that's just getting easier and more powerful. What I have people do is not create a storyboard. They create a story map. And unfortunately, all a storyboard will do is make sure your very boring story flows logically. It does absolutely nothing to make sure that it's a good story. And in my book, I've got a number of approaches to story mapping, but it's basically a graphical designer over which in phrases and so on, so you're not requiring students to right off the bat speak in full sentences and paragraphs and so on, which is just a real impediment, even though the story may be there, the writing actually slows it down. And yeah, I'm always looking for 3 points, and I train them in this, but I'm looking for some kind of problem and resolution. I'm looking for some kind of character transformation, and that can come in many different ways. Then they actually map out their story in terms of those points, sort of hang plot on top of that. Happens pretty quickly. Then they peer pitch it. And the model there is Hollywood, and you've got 2 minutes to sell your story. But what we're trying to do there is teach peer critiquing. Is the problem clear? Is it interesting? Is the resolution the same? And the character, do the characters changes make sense and so on? Then from there, then and only then do they decide whether they need a storyboard. And they can go from there to the storyboard and then to the script or right to the script.
Okay. Jason, you also have developed a number of tools to help teachers and pupils create meaningful stories, and like the visual portrait tool, for example. Can you elaborate a little bit on this tool and how it can be used in the creation of digital stories?
Well, that visual portrait of the story, which I adapted from the work of Brett Dillingham, also a storyteller that I work with, is a story map. And that's exactly what you want. What you want to do is map out the emotional flow of your narrative. And that's something that a storyboard simply can't do.
Okay. I've been looking through your website, jasonohler.com. We'll have the link up on our website to go with this podcast. And looking at some of the examples, because, as I say, a picture tells 1,000 words. And you know, I picked out two, for example. One was that the fox becomes a better person, and what caught me there was the Hannah's use of green screen in that, and maybe tell us a little bit about, you know, the role of the teacher in that particular project, or projects like that.
Sure. There's many different kinds of stories that I mean, technically speaking, there are many different technical ways to approach digital storytelling, which I should tell you, I prefer the term new media narrative.
Okay.
But in any event, there are many ways to approach this. The simple way to sort of get started is voiceover narration, because it's so contained. A child can do it sitting at a computer with a couple of pictures and a script and so on. Once you get kids performing, well, it takes out, you know, a lot more work, but the payoff is much better.
Okay.
In the case of Hannah's story, she's performing in an original story. We showed her, I worked with Brett Dillingham on that project, and we showed her how to perform, how to move her body, so on and so forth, how to use sounds and motions and so on. And the green screen aspect of it was simply we painted a wall green behind her. And the kids, of course, did all the taping and all that stuff. And had we had time, the kids would have done all of the green screen chroma key picture replacement, too. I've done a number of projects where they're quite capable of doing that, but we ran out of time on that project. But that's basically what it boils down to. I'm all about the low end.
Sure.
A $25 gallon of paint.
Yes.
Somebody else's camera. The minute you say it's got to be HBO ready, people sort of walk away from it because they know they don't have the time or the gear.
Okay, and obviously, you know, this is something we keep coming up against. Oh, well, I don't have the equipment, and I don't have the studio, and so on. But what you're saying is that, you know, the technology is out there. It's in the kids' hands. It's often in the kids' pockets themselves.
Yes, and also we need to lower our production values substantially if we're going to do this within a normal K-12 classroom. If you listen to a lot of my work, you'll hear kids talking in the background. You'll hear a phone ring. I can't worry about that stuff now because we have not created performance spaces for students. So we need to do it within the context of a classroom, and there are classroom management techniques to make it quieter and so on. But if we don't do that, then we won't do it at all.
Okay. And I see you have a good Irish story in there as well, The Broken Bells of Shandon from Hayley in Cork. Maybe
yes.
just very quickly tell us about that particular project.
We got a grant. Somebody saw our work doing green screen storytelling with the students. And we got a grant through there's a granting agency that specializes in connections between the U.S. and Ireland, and they funded us to go over and work with this school. It was a fabulous project. We loved every second of it.
Great, and hopefully we'll find some excuse to get you over again, Jason. Before we go, Jason, just on assessing student work, you talked there a minute ago about, you know, our maybe lowering our production values and so on. And that sometimes teachers kind of get too focused on, you know, the technology aspect of it rather than the story aspect of it. Do you have any final thoughts there on how we assess student work in this whole area?
Well, I'll tell you something very interesting. If you go out and you search for rubrics for assessing digital stories, almost none of them ask whether the story was any good.
Wow.
And that's the level of disconnect we have between the fact that this is a story, this is narrative. It's why I like to call it new media narrative. This is narrative, and we need to bring to bear our sense of expertise and expectation in terms of being clear and compelling in terms of narrative. We need to do that here, and we frequently don't do that. So on my website, you'll see a number of rubrics that students, my students who are teachers, have developed over the years. But here are two things to focus on is the story core presence. That is their problem resolution and transformation. And the word to hang on is alignment.
Okay.
So is the media aligned? So as I'm listening to a student say, once upon a time there was a dog, and I'm looking at a picture of a cat, that media is not aligned.
Okay, great. Well,
Can I mention my
yeah, sure.
next project?
Absolutely, Jason.
New book coming out in March called Digital Communities and Digital Citizenship. And I started out in educational technology as a researcher of cyber culture and got very interested in digital storytelling probably 15 years ago. But I'm sort of going back to my roots on this one, and it's about what it means to be a citizen within a digital community.
Okay, well, looking forward to it already, Jason. Unfortunately, we've run out of time, but I just mentioned your current book, which is Digital Storytelling in the Classroom. We'll have the link to it on the website that accompanies this podcast. Jason's website is jasonohler.com. As you can see, Jason has huge experience in this whole area and is still, like the rest of us, learning and continue to do so for many years, Jason. And hopefully we'll have you and see you over here soon in Ireland.
I sure hope so.
Okay, Jason, thanks very much for your time, and we'll be back to you soon again. Thank you. Bye.
All right.